The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
And what we said is we want to depressurize, de-escalate, and ultimately integrate the Middle East region. The war in Yemen is in its 19-month of truce. For now, the Iranian attacks against U.S. forces have stopped. Our presence in Iraq is stable. I emphasize for now because all of that can change. And the Middle East region is quieter today than it has been in two decades.
We are following breaking news in the Middle East. The biggest and deadliest flare-up between Israel and the Palestinian militants in years. A stunning and surprising attack countered by Israeli forces has seen bloodshed on both sides.
If you had asked me yesterday, I would not have told you was plausible. The idea that Palestinian gunmen are inside of Israeli communities is what has taken this country so by surprise. And it is the method and the level of sophistication with which they have carried out this attack. Yeah.
So we understand, obviously, that Hamas is leading these attacks. Do we know if other groups are involved as well?
Well, the Palestinian Islamic Jihad is involved as well, and both of them are working very closely with Iran, that provides them with the arms, with the technologies, with the ideas how to operate, with the guidance, with financial aid. So all of that is coming also, I guess, from a close relationship with the Iranians.
يا اخوان لا تمثلوا في الجثث لا تمثلوا فيهم هذا قتلاهم في النار الله اكبر ولله الحمد اخوان الله اكبر الله اكبر
Palestinians fighting between the two sides continues. Hundreds of civilians. That is quite an incredible scene there that we are seeing.
It does seem like this very coordinated attack came out of nowhere.
There'll be plenty of time in days to come to look and see what anyone missed, what we could have done better.
The Middle East exploding into violence and war, even right as the Jewish festival Sukkot comes to an end. Of course, God's people, even in Jerusalem, were celebrating the end of the Feast of Tabernacles and the last great day as we saw these horrific images coming out from southern Israel on Saturday. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We appreciate you joining us on this very sober Monday morning as we're back in our home studio here in Edmond, Oklahoma. We're grateful that you're joining our growing audience. You can get to that live video stream of this show at trumpetdaily.com and also over at our Rumble channel. Just go to rumble.com/trumpetdaily and you can watch the live stream every weekday morning at 11 a.m. in the central time zone of the United States. So a lot to get to on today's show. We're hoping to line up Israeli journalist Carolyn Glick for later on this week. We'd like to have a Zoom interview with her just to get her perspective. She had a pretty sobering podcast posting on Saturday night. So many journalists are weighing in on just how serious this development is. Full-scale war. Israel trying the experiment, living side by side with Hamas in peace. And of course, that's blown up in a spectacular way. I've lived in Israel back in 2007, 2012, and I remember some of the headlines that would dominate the news when one or maybe two or three soldiers were kidnapped, and then the negotiations that went back and forth, or maybe the occasional volley of rockets that came into southern or central Israel, or maybe from the north, from Hezbollah. But this, thousands and thousands of rockets, and then hundreds of Hamas terrorists just streaming across the border or flying in on hang gliders or paragliders, and then just mowing down citizens, shooting teenagers in the back as they fled, gang raping young Israeli women, teenagers in some cases, or maybe taking them back to Gaza. There's reports of over 100 hostages in Gaza. 100? Israel, of course, it's mobilizing its forces. It's calling up the reservists. It's preparing for invasion. How can it ever go back to what it was last week? Israel didn't control one inch, one square inch of Gaza. They provided electricity. They opened the way for people to deliver food. The West, of course, funding Hamas, funding the Palestinians, including Joe Obama. That's right. And of course, funding Hamas's paymasters in Iran to the tune of $6 billion and announced on, if you can believe it, wait for it, they announced it. Joe Obama announced it on September 11th, just a month ago, on the September 11th anniversary. $6 billion. And then all of these Joe Obama people out there in full force saying, well, now, none of that money actually went to this effort. No, no. Of course not. That's just for humanitarian aid. And I'll get to quite a few reports about Iran being behind this attack. This was not one terrorist attack on one small region. I mean, this was a declaration of war. And then to see the regime media, I gave a message Saturday morning after seeing these horrific images earlier in the day and said that it's at least refreshing for 2 seconds to hear some sympathy for these Israeli victims, even on CNN. But as I said in my message, you can expect that to not last for much longer. In fact, by tomorrow, the tune will change, and we'll play a montage for you here in just a second showing exactly that. All of these people rushing to the microphone to say what? To say how it's the Palestinians who are being persecuted. It's the Palestinians in Gaza living in this open-air prison. It's the Palestinian children who are being targeted by the Israelis. Did they not see these images Saturday morning? Israel's army has said this is 9/11 and Pearl Harbor wrapped into one. Their spokesman said it's by far the worst day in Israeli history. I mean, the surprise attack 50 years ago, Yom Kippur. Yeah, a lot of Israelis died, but they were in the army for the most part. I mean, that's the way wars used to be fought. Not so with Hamas. Not so with Iran. If you're Hamas, I mean, you surround the music festival there in the desert of southern Israel, and you just start mowing down the young people, and then raping them, and then kidnapping some. Or if you can pierce the border in a Toyota truck with all these gunmen wielding AK-47s, just start shooting down people as they drive by. You've got the zip ties in case there's any that survive. Handcuff them, take them back to Gaza. Reuters called it the worst breach in Israel's defenses since Arab armies waged war in 1973. How about that? It's the worst one-day killing of Jews since World War II. What's the death count up to now? Is it over 800? It's surely going to keep climbing. People just lying dead in the streets. I saw one image of a family let out of the attic as the father's rushing them out to run away from these barbarians. And he was the last one out, as a good father would be, and got gunned down as he had his leg halfway out the window. The rest of his family, hopefully they survived. Because Hamas, they were quite happy to shoot little children, little innocents. 2,000 rockets Saturday morning, perhaps more. And it continues. We'll be going to our Jerusalem correspondent here pretty soon. I mean, they're hearing sirens up in Jerusalem. Even today. These terrorists, they fanned out, killed civilians. I think they took over the police station in Sderot. I think there's still some pockets where the terrorists are controlling areas in southern Jordan. I mean, we've never seen this. Usually it's the kind of the random attacks and they're not so effective. This was coordinated. This was planned by the Iranian paymasters, by the Iranian organizers, by the mullahs. I mean, they got together in Beirut just last week. That's reported by the Wall Street Journal. And then we're supposed to play along with all these spokespeople saying, well, now there's no evidence. What do you know when they come out and say there's no evidence? There's no evidence that Iran was really involved here. If they say there's no evidence, that means there's mountains. There's mountains and mountains and mountains of evidence. This is from a write-up at Tablet. These heart-wrenching images that we're used to seeing in photos and documentary films about the Holocaust are not from events in Europe 80 years ago. They're from events in Israel 48 hours ago. They're not perpetrated by the Nazis, but by the Islamist terrorists of Hamas. Some of them are wielding swastikas. Do you think that's going to get the attention of the MSNBC talking heads? Or what about up in Canada? They search far and wide for a fake swastika during the truckers' protest. And then the media, they just amplify it over and over and over again. Not so here. They occurred inside the internationally recognized borders of a sovereign state. And maybe more than any catastrophe in Israel's tragic history to date, reflect the colossal failure of the Jewish state to fulfill its most sacred duty for which it was originally founded, to protect Jews. Yes, Israel was caught sleeping. There's a lot of internal division and strife in Israel at the moment. The left-wing media, they hate Benjamin Netanyahu. They want to destroy him. They want to blot him out. And of course, Hamas and Hezbollah and Iran, they're looking at all this internal division. They're looking at what leadership or lack thereof is there in Washington, D.C. It's not even like they're just, you know, incompetent in D.C., as we'll cover on today's show, if we have time, as we'll cover on today's show. I mean, this is just the natural outgrowth of Barack Hussein Obama's fundamental transformation. It's not just the transformation of the United States. It's the transformation of the whole world order. This is the natural outgrowth of the JCPOA back in 2015 and 16. The Iran nuke deal, something my father said was the greatest foreign policy disaster in the history of the United States. Well, now look at where we are. Still funding the mullahs, still helping them to get a nuclear bomb. That's what Lee Smith writes at Tablet. Yeah, it's not just that, oh, we're going to kind of give you a lot of money now, and but because we've got oversight, we'll keep Iran from building a nuclear weapon. In fact, Barack Obama wants them to have it. That's right. He wants them to have the bomb. And he hates the Jews, and he hates the United States. America under attack. Well, now we see little Israel, Judah, under attack. You know, back in 2001, we said, you know, look, this effort to lash after 9/11, to lash out at Afghanistan, it's misguided because it's not going for the head of the snake. Melanie Phillips wrote a piece yesterday or the day before saying, now Israel needs to go for, wait for it, the head of the snake. That would be Iran. It's going to be interesting to see if there's some similarities here, because Manasseh, when they came after the trade centers, when they came after the Pentagon, Manasseh lashed out. The United States lashed out at Afghanistan and later Iraq, but never go for the head of the snake, the number one state sponsor of terrorism. Now, it'll be interesting to see what little Judah does as they march into Gaza. Maybe they lash out at Hezbollah. Are they going to go for the head of the snake? Probably not. We'll see. I mean, Israel does have some fight. They do tend to fight back if they're attacked. They came under attack on Saturday morning, completely unprovoked. As someone tweeted out on Twitter, if Israel stopped fighting today, they'd be obliterated. If Hamas stopped fighting today, there would be peace between the two. That's the difference. Expect to hear a lot about disproportionate force. It's got to be proportionate. How do you arrive at some kind of level proportion when you've got these savages streaming across the border, gang raping your women and killing your children? What's the proportional response to that? This piece says here, the staggering cost and simply unfathomable numbers of the many hundreds of murdered and kidnapped Israelis from Saturday's deadly Hamas attack from Gaza have already been dubbed by Israelis as our own national 9/11 or Pearl Harbor. How many did America, the nation of what, 300 million at that time? 300 million people we lost. Let's talk about proportion for a moment. 3,000 die in 9/11 in a nation of 330 million. And on Saturday, as many as perhaps 1,000 slaughtered in the little nation of Israel, 8 million people. Mahdi Hassan over at MSNBC, he's there. He's waxing eloquent about just how small Gaza is. And, you know, there's 2.2 million people there. It's really an open-air prison. Well, Israel's not very big either, Mahdi. And Israel's got 8 million people in a tiny little nation surrounded by enemies. Iran sees Israel as the little Satan, and they see America as the big Satan. And so what does Barack Obama do? Well, give billions of dollars to the mullahs. Give them pallets of cash. Give them another $6 billion. Let's unfreeze it. Let's send it from, what was it, in a South Korean bank? Let's move it over to Qatar and just give them the money. Listen, we can come out with an announcement saying we're going to watch how they spend it. And it's going to be all spent on humanitarian needs. All of these millions coming into Gaza, coming into the Palestinian government in Ramallah. And how is it spent? Well, in Gaza, they spend it on rockets. They spend it on paragliders. They spend it on AK-47s. That's how the money's being spent. Never mind what they tell you on TV. They lie. They just lie. It says here, but unfortunately, this is our national 9/11 or Pearl Harbor, the thought says, but unfortunately, given the nature and scale of the horrific crimes perpetrated against Israelis, the vast majority of them civilians, not soldiers, including many children, women, and the elderly. The more appropriate analogy is that of the Holocaust. It's not on that scale, obviously, but just indiscriminately killing Jews because they're Jews, whether they're children or women or elderly. Yeah, there's images of, they're carting off an elderly woman, taking her back to Gaza as a hostage. The appropriate analogy there is the Holocaust. All of this happening over the weekend as God's people were finishing off their observance of the Feast of Tabernacles and the Last Great Day. And then the Jews in Israel finishing their Sukkot festival as well. We've got Brent Nachtigal, our correspondent from Jerusalem, who was there as they were having their final services of the Last Great Day observance. I think we had, he can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think we had about 50 people there in Jerusalem on Saturday as the sirens were sounding. Brent, it's good to have you on today's program. Maybe you can start by just giving us your perspective on what it was like Saturday morning as this news was beginning to unfold.
Yeah, thanks for having me on the show. It was a very different experience. I've lived in Jerusalem full time for 7 years and have experienced rocket attacks, the occasional ones to Jerusalem before. And yet this was just a pretty big bombardment there on Saturday morning. And this was in the lead up to the services that we were having here for the Last Great Day. And many of our people were in a hotel about 400 meters away. And so, you know, they were taking cover in the basement of the hotel following the hotel staff's orders. And we were in our building here. And to see Jerusalem attacked on that day is quite significant. Most Israelis are going to be, or the religious ones, going to be in their sukkahs or their booths to eat meals. So this was something that was very sobering, and even before then, just after this first wave of rocket attacks, you know, I saw the news and seeing these armed men on pickups in Israeli towns. That was the shocking part, even more than the rocket attack on Jerusalem and elsewhere in Israel. The fact that the border was penetrated by a group that looked like ISIS, and basically the same thing. This was absolutely shocking, and from that moment, I knew that this was something different. And so we've got a lot of guests in town for Jerusalem at this time, and just to try and not be too alarmist, but at the same time, recognize that Israel hasn't seen this in 50 years. This is something that is a dangerous change, especially with the infiltration. But, you know, our people were, I wouldn't say they were completely stressed out about it, but it is a very sobering moment to recognize that your city is under attack. We had somebody walk up after the one of the barrages, and a piece of shrapnel just dropped out of the sky right next to them. There's a walking up about a 2-inch piece of shrapnel because the Iron Dome system had intercepted rockets that were coming in to Jerusalem, thankfully. So yeah, the Last Great Day here in Jerusalem was in a war zone.
Tell me a little bit about the infiltration, what you've read or observed on the news over there regarding just the number of Hamas terrorists that penetrated the border, and then maybe the extent to which they fanned out or spread out over the region there around Sderot and elsewhere.
Yeah, so this area called the Gaza Envelope, it's the area 5 to 10 kilometers from the Gaza border. After they breached the border, and this was an intelligence failure by Israel, of course, but they used munitions that dropped from drones to destroy numerous observation towers. And then they had a barrage of rockets that went out. And then there was the paraglider that came out, you know, underneath the rockets and landed right in that where that massive or the large concert was going on, or a dance party, and just mowed down 250 civilians. Just shocking footage coming out from that. Right now, the latest figure I saw just before coming on here was that there was 1,000 Hamas fighters that breached the border in southern Israel and ended up fighting in about 20 different Israeli communities along the border. And only right now there's names coming in of people that, you know, were killed in this attack, this invasion. And, you know, I know people in this envelope. And so I'm scanning down the list to see if there's this, you know, the people that I know are being, you know, these people that were killed. And so this is very real for Israelis. I think, you know, Jerusalem is kind of vacant right now, and has been so for the past 2 days, because you've had this mass mobilization of 300,000 reservists, some going to the north, some going to the south. This is huge for Israel to mobilize that, the biggest mobilization in Israel's history in that short of a time, 48 hours. So Israel is preparing for something big. The mass, you were talking about how big this is in comparison to 9/11. This is 40 9/11s in terms of the people that were killed, already killed. And so Israel is devastated by it. And it's hard not to see that there's going to be some very major ground operation into the Gaza Strip, which Israel has not done since they withdrew. And then, you know, the big question is, you know, some people going to the north for the reserve, some people going to the south. The south is where Gaza is. And Gaza is 5% of what Hezbollah is in the north. And so that's the big worry for Israel even now. Does Hezbollah join the fight in the north? And so we know people in the south, in the reserves, these are family people, family men with children, wives, they are gone. The city here is basically shutting down on bare bones. Restaurants closed, supermarkets already, shelves are being, there's no one bringing more produce to the city. So the shelves are being emptied. So Israel is definitely on a war footing, and it's hard to see that Israel doesn't have an overwhelming response. Prime Minister Netanyahu just said that he said to get ready for a changed Middle East. So that seems to imply far more than just a ground operation into Gaza. And so, you know, most of the flights even coming out of Israel from international carriers, they've been halted. So there's a lot of scrambling to try and get on some of these smaller flights that are going to somewhere in Europe and then jump back to the United States. So yeah, I've been here 7 years, no comparison to any experience, in a war situation as what we're going through right now.
Regarding the security breach, there've been quite a few people on this side or over here in America that have talked about, you know, the fence and the barrier and just the technology. As you said, they're tracking everything, even the sense of touch, but also you know, cameras and so on. And how is it possible that, you know, I don't know what the forces were like down there alongside the border, but, you know, the image of the bulldozer just ramming through the fence and then, you know, the fighters or the terrorists pouring in. People have wondered how could what was considered to be one of the most secure borders in the world, how could it be so easily penetrated?
Yeah, I don't have a good answer for that. It's absolutely shocking to Israelis that this happened. Hamas is saying that they lured Israel into a false sense of security over the past year by doing certain things. I mean, we've had drones coming over from Gaza by Hamas multiple times every month, and they just get blown out of the sky, or they weren't holding munitions. And so perhaps there was a bit of a false sense of security there. Perhaps the troops were elsewhere. When you outsource a lot of your border security to technology and thinking that you can know what's happening and get there in time through your observation towers, if those observation towers are gone, these aren't observation towers with people, these are it's all, you know, video cameras. And as you're saying, if somebody touches the fence, they know where that happens. You remember, I think we went up to the border back in the second Lebanon war. And I think it was for a couple of months in the lead up to the breach of that border, when they nabbed a couple of Israeli soldiers, the Hezbollah fighters were going up to the wall, touching it, or up to the fence, touching it, and then going back, touching it, and then going back. And so the Israelis come from the bus, they come from the base, and they go down to the border, and they try and see what's going on there, nothing. So then they go back to the base. You do that enough times, and then one time, you actually cut the wires, and you go through. And so I don't know exactly all the ins and outs here, but this was an absolute catastrophe that 1,000 fighters from Hamas could breach and take hold of Israeli towns and walk through and ride through streets with machine guns and just have a just go at whoever they find, and then nab about 150 it is right now hostages and bring them back to Gaza. You'll remember that Gilad Shalit, he was one soldier that was nabbed back over a decade ago and taken back to Gaza. There were 1,000 Palestinians terrorists that were released out of prison in Israel to get that one soldier back. And so Israel can't even consider doing that with the number that's there. So yeah, we are just in uncharted territory here for Israel and their response.
One last thing, and you've touched on it briefly, but in our email exchange over the weekend, you mentioned the reserve is coming up. Some of them are our friends. We know these families. Their children are now going off to Gaza or up to the north, as you said, and you talked about the stores shutting down. I mean, the nation is in mourning. So just from what interaction you've had, I guess you haven't had a lot since it just happened 48 hours ago. But I guess besides just mourning the dead, I mean, what is the national mood like in Israel?
Yeah, the national mood is absolute anger. And, you know, there are some, I suppose, crazy left-wing outlets that are trying to pin blame on the government. But right now, Israelis are coming together. The protests have shut down. They're not happening, obviously. Israelis are coming together and they are furious that this was allowed to happen. And then you just see the barbarism of it. The United States, after September 11th, people would say it lashed out. They lashed out the wrong person, wrong nation, not going after Iran, but they put a lot of money into going after Afghanistan. If you multiply what happened to Israel now by 40 times, you can expect a wrathful Israeli government and wrathful Israeli citizens to want to settle the score in a way that doesn't, that's probably the wrong terminology, remove the threat. And so Hamas, in terms of Israel, right now this has been a failure. Absolutely horrible. Everyone knows somebody that is fighting in this war from each family. But then you can, to only even just settle it in some way, Hamas has to be removed from the Gaza Strip completely, like demolished, like no more presence in Gaza. And then, you know, this is Iran that's pulling the strings, as you talked about. So Israelis are equal right now in terms of their displacement of forces. The South has them, but then the North has them. We know somebody, a family that lives right on the border of Lebanon. They were removed. Their whole town was evacuated yesterday. And so that in the event that there's a ground invasion by Hezbollah. So Israel is preparing for all these eventualities. But the mood in Israel right now, it's sobriety, of course, mourning. But then the nation waits in anticipation of what comes next. So many of Israel's families are fighting in this war that I think the nation, it's only got one choice but to come together and face this threat.
All right. Well, Brent, we appreciate your insights as our correspondent on the ground in Jerusalem. And by the way, Brent sat down with the Israeli journalist Carolyn Glick just a week ago on this program, a fascinating interview. Of course, this was all before the nightmare that happened on Saturday morning. But if you'd like to go back and listen to his discussion with Carolyn Glick, that's at our Rumble channel. Just go to the Rumble channel, rumble.com/trumpetdaily. And you can view that interview. And as I told you at the top of the show, hopefully we'll be able to talk with Carolyn Glick via Zoom at a later time this week. So thanks for that, Brent, and we'll look forward to talking to you again. You are listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We'll be right back.
Daily news, Bible prophecy. See the connection on the Trumpet Daily. Are you feeling overwhelmed by the flood of news and information? You need something to sift the news and bring you only what matters most. You need the Trumpet Daily. You also need something to help you understand not just what's happening now, but what will happen next. You need the Trumpet Daily. Only the Trumpet Daily accurately matches daily news to precise Bible prophecies. Because Bible prophecy is the only tool up to the task of sifting the news down to what's important and showing you what will happen next. Join host Stephen Fleury every weekday. Go to TrumpetDaily.com.
Are we living in the last days? Some dismiss the notion as fanatical, but world leaders and news analysts are issuing warnings that are becoming more and more dire. Could Bible prophecies about the last days actually be accurate? Our brochure can help guide you through the relevant news and history and help you compare these events to what the Bible says. Are we living in the last days? This brochure is available for free right now at thetrumpet.com.
And there has been the most aggressive encroachment into the West Bank by this far-right coalition government of any that we've seen. This mobilization that has been going on for a year and that is reaching critical points, not completely observed by the outside world, frankly.
Provocations day after day, time after time, was nonstop, and it seems like the Netanyahu government is not willing to bring any peace to the region.
It's conflicting for me because you have people in there and innocent bystanders that'll be involved in it, but at the same time, it's like, you know, what other choice did they have?
Do you condemn what Hamas did inside Israel to Israeli civilians? There are dead and there are hostages.
First and foremost, the Western media must really abandon this framework that has gotten us to where we are today.
Okay, but I just want
The loss of civilian life is tragic in all sides. You've counted 70 Israeli deaths. There is more than 200 Palestinian deaths so far, more than 1,600. Entire residential compounds are being wiped out. This is a war crime committed by Israel. What is more tragic, or equally tragic, is the blindness and the deafness of the world. Every single political avenue is blocked. Every single legal avenue for us is blocked. Like, don't underestimate people's desire for freedom, for ending the bondage and captivity. Pay attention to the destruction that Israel is doing. Make sure that these supremacists in the Israeli government are not going to turn the whole thing upside down. You know that they have been under besiegement since 2007, the biggest open-air prison. This is what leads to events that you want to discuss.
So here's the thing.
Let's remember that their lot is in part because they are in this almost prison. They cannot, you know, Israel maintains a border controls that are essentially a stranglehold. No, it's very hard to leave. It's very hard to import anything.
Boy, they wish that those same Israelis who were out there protesting the so-called judicial reforms would be protesting Israel's inhumane treatment of the Palestinians who live under Israeli occupation. But that's just not something that's happening.
The fact that Israel is an occupying power, the fact that Israel has violated international law and Palestinian rights. You spend taxpayer money on buying Israel defense systems and trying those defense systems on Palestinians.
You've got 2.2 million people crowded into 141 square miles. So they automatically become the victims of Israeli airstrikes because it's so crowded, because it's so densely populated. And it's basically like living, Alex, in an open-air prison.
I couldn't think of a better gift for Benjamin Netanyahu right now than this kind of incursion.
exactly what do the Israelis hope to achieve? Reoccupation of the Gaza Strip? A major ground incursion to destroy Hamas's military leadership? Where does this go, Wolf? That's the real problem. Where's the strategy to ensure that this is not a brutal and horrific rinse, wash, and repeat cycle?
The prime minister of Israel, the most right-wing in its history, the most far-right extremist Jewish nationalist, Jewish supremacist government that has existed in Israel, has been over the past...
By law, you're not characterizing, by the way. That's actually what they've written into their
That is just like factually, you know what I mean? The rhetoric that has come out from Israeli politicians towards the Palestinians in the West Bank over the past several months has been vile, has been disgusting.
What Hamas is doing is they're targeting Israeli civilians, women, children, grandmothers.
No, they are not.
Is that not a classic terrorism? Isn't that classic terrorism? They're not fighting the Israeli government. They're fighting ordinary people.
That's one way of putting it, but it's not true.
No, it's not true, says this guy, whoever he is. He doesn't get shouted down or blotted out or censored. Certainly not. It's not true. They're not targeting civilians. You know, it occurred to me as I was watching that montage there that's put together by our producers here on this program. But these are the same talking heads that say January 6th, that's the most brutal, violent attack on an American target, perhaps since the Civil War. And then you have all this raping, this pillaging, this burning... house to house to gun down children, shooting cars randomly as they pass by, kidnapping, gang raping, parading the dead bodies through the streets to cheering crowds. And all of these apologists, they rush to the microphone, as I say, to sympathize with these barbarians and to tell you that it's Israel's that the Israeli government is white supremacist, you see. I mean, what is worse? It's the terrorist mentality on display in the talk shows. And then it's the terrorists carrying out the atrocities that these people, I guess, they support it. I mean, how can you not go? How can you not puncture the border at Gaza and go into Israel and rape and pillage and murder and torture? Because, I mean, you're living in an open-air prison. But Gaza, yes, it's small. But it borders. It doesn't just border with Israel. It's got a border with Egypt. It's got a nice long border along the Mediterranean Sea. I mean, there's some positives there, just as far as building a country is concerned. And then they get all this helpful support and aid from Israel. Food comes pouring in. The electricity comes from Israel. But on Saturday morning, completely unprovoked, here come as many as 1,000 barbarians, savages, just looking, not to go, they're not looking to go after the Israeli army, the IDF. No, no, they're going after the women and children. They're going after hostages, as Brent noted in the first segment. Galid Shalit, I mean, he was one hostage, and they gave like 1,000 prisoners over just in exchange for him. What do you do now? If there's 150 hostages tucked away in Gaza somewhere, what do you do if you're Israel? It's unbelievable the kind of coverage that these atrocities generate. As I said in my lecture on Saturday morning, it's nice to see a little bit of sympathy for Israel and their victims. For at least a few seconds, but you can expect that to change. Now we'll begin to hear about how disproportionate the response is. Israel's had to fight this battle for decades with one hand behind its back because of the United States, the EU, because of Western nations, because of the regime media. Carolyn Glick got it right over the weekend. Look, the 18-year experiment of living side by side along Hamas, it has failed. The only option Israel has now is to obliterate Hamas. But even then, if you don't go after the head of the snake, just like Melanie Phillips said, is it going to correct the problem long term? There was a U.S. Official He's at the U.S. Office of Palestinian Affairs. He tweeted out, "We urge all sides to refrain from violence and retaliatory attacks." All sides? So you've got Israel on this side, and then you've got Hamas on that side, and we don't want retaliatory attacks. Just kind of let this go. The raping, the pillage, the murdering, the kidnapping, the hostage taking. Let it go. That tweet was deleted soon after because of the outrage. People are sitting there going, what is wrong with the leaders of today? I mean, we were off, as I say, we were off celebrating. We were off envisioning a time when the government of God, a just and righteous and fair government, will soon rule the earth and bring peace and security and happiness and joy and prosperity and contentment to all nations. Even as we're celebrating that, God's family, you see how dysfunctional and broken the U.S. government system is, with a House Speaker who's only in there for 9 months. And then you have these barbaric scenes coming out of southern Israel on Saturday morning. As that happened, Mahmoud Abbas, the Palestinian leader in the West Bank, he sent out this message: "We have the right to defend ourselves against Israel and settler terrorism." Defend? So he justifies this audacious attack on Israeli citizens and says, hey, we're just defending ourselves. The only way he could get away with a statement like that is because of how much sympathy they get from Western journalists. Look at all of the demonstrations over the weekend in London, in Montreal, in the United States, in New York City, on campuses, Harvard, all these people coming out to show their support, not for Israeli victims who were raped and murdered and kidnapped, no, to show their support for Hamas. How do you solve a problem like this? Well, you can see why the devil is so angry, particularly when God's people are assembling together, yes, even in Jerusalem, to meditate on a time when problems such as this will actually be solved by the government of God, by the family of God, by the kingdom of God, that kingdom that's going to bring peace and stability to this world. And even as we, as I say, even as we were celebrating these festivals, you see the world just going up in flames. The world of today. We were envisioning the world tomorrow. What does it say in Revelation 11? You read through the end of that passage, and well, when Jesus Christ returns to this earth to rule this earth with a rod of iron, it says the nations are angry. How could they be angry? To come underneath the loving rule of the God family. Well, it shows you a little something about the world today. The God of this world, Satan the devil, 2 Corinthians 4:4, he hates God's purpose and plan. He hates it. He's trying to destroy it. He's trying to prevent it from going forward. He knows he has but a short time, Revelation 12 says. And so he's the spirit behind all of these abominable acts of horror, lawlessness, violence, crime. Read through Genesis 6 and see how it was in the days before the flood. We're there. And Jesus said it would be just like the days before the flood of Noah's day. We are there. We are there. This is from the Wall Street Journal. It says here, the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps gave the final go-ahead last Monday in Beirut. You've got all these Joe Obama officials out there saying, well, we don't know if Iran was really behind it. No, we don't know. There's no evidence. Sure. Iranian security officials helped plan Hamas's Saturday surprise attack on Israel and gave the green light for the assault at a meeting in Beirut last Monday, according to senior members of Hamas and Hezbollah, another Iran-backed militant group. Think about the escalation. Forget about Israel's response. Think about the escalation if Hezbollah enters. There's already reports of some rocket fire coming from the north. It says officers of Iran's Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps had worked with Hamas since August. See, this was well-planned, coordinated. They worked since August to devise the air, land, and sea incursions, the most significant breach of Israel's border since 1973, the 73 Yom Kippur War. It says details of the operation were refined during several meetings in Beirut, attended by IRGC officers and representatives of four Iran-backed militant groups, including Hamas, Hezbollah, a Shiite militant group and political faction of Lebanon, they said. This is the Wall Street Journal. It says U.S. officials say they haven't seen evidence of Tehran's involvement. So everybody knows. But U.S. officials, that would be Joe Obama's people. They haven't seen the evidence. Listen to the Deputy National Security Advisor on whether or not Iran was involved. This is clip six.
Any implication that money that has not yet been spent, not a single dollar of that money has yet been spent, it had any role in the attacks that took place, in planning them, in equipping the parties that conducted them, just frankly doesn't make any sense. And as we've been clear, that money can only be spent on humanitarian items.
But if Iran knows it's getting $6 billion worth of breathing room, is it not fair to assess and have a conversation about whether they then would think the funds they do have in-house that are already at their disposal could be spent in nefarious ways?
It's a good question by the Fox reporter. She's basically saying, well, if they know the $6 billion coming from over here, coming from Joe Obama, if they know that's coming in and they can use that on humanitarian aid, support, then why not take the $300 million or the billion over here and put it toward rockets and machine guns and this coordinated plan to pierce the border and to send in 1,000 terrorists to kill civilians. But there they are continuing in their fantasy land that no, Iran's like they're like an ally of ours. That's straight from Barack Hussein Obama's playbook. I don't even have time to get to some of these other writings from Lee Smith and Victor Davis Hanson. I guess I'll have to save it for tomorrow's show. But this was what Donald Trump tweeted on September 11. That's when they announced that the $6 billion was going to the mullahs. Trump said, can you believe that Joe Biden is giving $6 billion to the terrorist regime in Iran? That money will be used for terrorism all over the Middle East and the world. This incompetent fool is absolutely destroying America. He had the audacity to announce this terrible deal on September 11. To pay for hostages will lead to kidnapping, ransom, and blackmail across the globe. To pay for, remember, that was part of the deal. There was the prisoner swap, and then the U.S. threw in an extra $6 billion. Why not? That was just a month ago. And Trump said to pay for hostages will lead to more kidnapping, ransom, and blackmail. Yet again, he was right. That is all that we have time for on today's show, the fastest moving hour in broadcasting. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We appreciate you joining us on today's show, and we will definitely see you tomorrow.